Hello, everyone, and welcome back to the Surprise Jab Podcast. I'm your host, Zach Ruger, surprising you with new topics every single week and jabbing you with your daily dose of UFC, and we have a phenomenal UFC fight night coming at you guys this Saturday. I was going to say Sunday for some reason. Saturday, September 28th in Paris, France. I always love these Paris cards. So far, two for two. They've had two. They usually have one in September, usually on the first weekend, but this time it's on the final weekend of September, and I'm not complaining. Because I'm happy we're getting a little UFC. So we'll be dropping our predictions for the Paris card on today's episode as well. We're going to be dropping our week four NFL predictions, looking at all the matchups and deciding who we think is going to win each of them. And even probably talk about fantasy football impact on that as well. Of course, we're going to be looking at some new UFC fights. They had a bunch of big announcements the other day for the China card going down in UFC Macau. I believe it's November 23rd. And pop culture. I mean, I always love pop culture, top 10 new things. And I was trying to get two episodes out this week, but, you know, matters in life come about. And instead, we're going to have to save some of the topics I wanted to talk about, such as, actually, I won't spoil it, I think. We got some fun segments, fun topics coming at you in future episodes. There's just, life's a lot right now. I can't lie, life is a lot. I'm a busy man, and as busy as I am, sometimes I'm not busy. And my mind, I don't know, I think differently than people at times, but we won't get into none of that nonsense. Let's get into some fun stuff, guys, such as new UFC fights already, and we have had some very interesting ones, such as a fight going down at UFC Vegas 100 in the men's middleweight division as Gerald Meerschaert, of course, the submission leader in the men's middleweight division, takes on the debuting Renier, the Dutch Knight de Ridder, and Renier is a one championship light heavyweight and heavyweight champion. Joining the UFC, coming off a win in his last matchup, he's 17-2, and I believe of those 17 wins, he has like 11 submissions, something ridiculous, 12 submissions or something. So he's very talented, very credible in the one championship is almost like how do I even compare one championship? It's the Asian. UFC. That's the only way I can compare it, even though the UFC goes over there. It's just another MMA promotion. And he was super, super talented over there. I mean, I don't really recognize any of the names he's beaten, but Gerald Meerschaert, a lot of people are expecting him to get a higher name, but Gerald Meerschaert, the ultimate gatekeeper, the ultimate man to beat you, just beat Edmund Shabazian not too long ago, I think earlier this year. So that's going to be a very exciting fight, and I'm very interested to see how Renier de Ridder does in the UFC. And mind you, you know, he is 34, so it's tough to kind of make a run at 34. I mean, Alex Pereira is a special case. I'll be interested to see his debut. Here's a fun one for you. The main event for UFC Macau. The main event for UFC Macau going down in Macau, China, November 23rd, as the number 3 ranked men's bantamweight Piotr Jan takes on the number 5th ranked Deiveson Figueiredo. What an amazing matchup. I'm so excited this is actually getting made. This was a fantasy matchup back in 2020 when Piotr Jan and Deiveson Figueiredo were both of the men's bantamweight and flyweight champions, respectively. And now here we are 4 years later, and we're actually getting this matchup. Piotr Jan, 17-5, 9-4 in the UFC. Now, those four losses, I kind of want to point them out. They are to Sean O'Malley, split decision, all right, former champion. Aljamain Sterling, twice, all right, both championship matchups. And Mahram Dvalishvili. Okay, this guy has only lost to the last three champions. Most recently beat Song Yedong in February in a very high-paced matchup. And now here we go, having him fight Deiveson Figueiredo. And Deiveson Figueiredo, just picked up a big win over Cody Garbrandt. He's also beaten, Rob Font at bantamweight. Guys, this is going to be an absolutely amazing matchup. I'm so pumped for this, and I don't even know who to pick. I kind of want to go Piotr Jan, if I'm being honest, but I know how good Deiveson Figueiredo is. We'll have to see, but UFC Macau going to be a banger of a matchup there. Here's a little fun one for you. Going down at UFC 310, the final pay-per-view of the year, December 7th, of course, at the T-Mobile Arena in Las Vegas. Men's lightweight matchup is Clay Guida, who is now, holy cow, I can't even believe this. He is 43 years old. Wow. 43 years old. He'll be taking on the young up-and-comer, the 24-year-old Chase the Dream Hooper. Wow, almost two decades separate these two in age. And Chase Hooper just got added to EA Sports UFC 5, so congrats to him. I saw it on Twitter. He was super thrilled about that. 14-3 in the UFC, 6-3 so far, and I believe he's either 3-0 or 4-0 since moving to lightweight, getting big submission wins too. Just dominated Vyacheslav Borshev, might I add. One of the most dominant performances I've ever seen in a two-round matchup. I think he... had like 60 significant strikes to 2, completely controlled him, knocked him down, submitted him. It was very incredible. I'm excited to see that match. Man, it's on a pay-per-view. You know, they get an actual crowd, which I enjoy. Another fun matchup. This one going down in Tampa Bay, Florida. Tampa, Florida, December 14th for a little UFC Fight Night. As the number 9 ranked men's flyweight, Manel Cape takes on the number 12 ranked Bruno Silva. Manel Cape, 4-3 in the UFC. Those losses, you know, I'll throw it right out there. He's lost to Muhammad Mokaev, who arguably should still be in the UFC undefeated. Alexander Pantoja, and who he lost in his debut. And Matthias Nicolau, who I honestly thought Manel Cape won that fight. So Manel Cape, always bringing the action, always beating guys a little lower level in competition than him, and always kind of losing close decisions to people above him. And Bruno Silva, 4-2 in the UFC, just picked up a knockout win over Cody Durden, which was so amazing. And looking at how good Cody Durden performed in his last matchup, it's clear to see that Bruno Silva is a legit contender. 15-5 record overall. I mean, he's a talented fighter. Excited to see it. Here's the co-main event for UFC Macau, China. Look at Macau, China card. That is Yan Chayonin, the number 2 ranked woman's strawweight, taking on the number 9 ranked Tabitha Ritchie. And Tabitha Ritchie's boyfriend is actually like a boxer in Ireland, and he just had a huge event and won. So, I mean, it might run in the family if Tabitha Ritchie can get it done. So, best of luck to her. She's 11-2 overall, 6-2 in the UFC. Yan Chayonin, 8-3. There were rumors that she was going to get a title shot. Apparently not. And in a very weird turn of events, I do just want to touch on this. I don't know what's going on, but in the women's strawweight division, the number 1 ranked Tatiana Suarez is taking on the number 3 ranked Virgin Droba, and the number 2 contender Yan Chayonin is taking on the number 9 ranked Tabitha Ritchie. So Zhang Weili doesn't even have an opponent. I don't know if she's hurt. And I mean, she's beaten the number 4 woman, the number 5 woman. Everyone else below her just doesn't have a fight. So I legit have no idea what they're doing with Zhang Weili, if she's even going to fight again this year. Kind of confused by that. I'm also confused how she's not on the China card, being that she is the only Chinese champion. But we get to see Yan Chayonin. So exciting stuff there. UFC 310, this one is not going down at UFC 310. This fight's going down on UFC Macau, men's light heavyweight division. The number 6 ranked Volkan Ozdemir takes on the number 10 ranked Carlos Ulberg. Carlos Ulberg is 6-1 in the UFC, and he is on a 6-fight win streak. All of those wins coming by finish, 5 of them by knockout too, which is super impressive. Volkan Ozdemir coming off a big win in his last matchup this year, knocking out Johnny Walker. I'm excited for this one. Someone's going to sleep. I'm going to ride with Carlos Ulberg. But Carlos, 10-1, Volkan, 20-7, both veterans. Volkan actually fought, I think in his 4th UFC fight, Daniel Cormier for the men's light heavyweight championship. Just to kind of give you a little background on him. And the last fun matchup I kind of want to touch on, this one going down to UFC 310, of course, December 7th, as Michael Chiesa, fresh off his round 1 submission of Tony Ferguson, is back. The 19-7 UFC veteran takes on Max Payne Griffin, a fellow UFC vet who holds wins over Carlos Condit and Mike Perry of notoriety. Both of these guys up there in age, almost approaching 40, and I'm just excited to see them do battle. Excited to see how they perform. I like that we're not feeding them to young, hungry up-and-comers. We're actually being kind. We're being nice. We're letting them fight each other, I guess. I don't really know how you view it. Speaking of Tony Ferguson, I don't even know if he's ever coming back to fight. We'll have to see. I don't know. Very interested in that. But that's all your new UFC news. There isn't really too much other news. I mean, you're not going to get any 2025 news until December. The year is slowly filling out. I think the big mystery is, what is the UFC 310 main event? My money's probably going to be on Bilal Muhammad and Shafkat Rakhmonov, but there is a slim chance you get Armin Tsarukyan versus Islam Makhachev in their rematch. We'll have to see what happens, but that's all your new UFC news. I hope that was somewhat informative. I'll also let you know that there's always new stuff going on in the entertainment industry. Hollywood, if you want to call that, movies, TV shows. I've actually been watching that Menendez show. Was it Killer? Is it Monster? The Menendez Brothers, and it is so good. It is so good. I just finished episode 4 right before recording this, and I'm excited to watch 5, 6, 7, 8, and 9. All right, it's so amazing. And Dahmer, I love that show too. And I get they want you to sympathize, but I'm actually kind of confused how I'm not supposed to sympathize with the Menendez brothers. Like with Dahmer, it was like you'd somewhat sympathize, but then you'd be like, no, he has had no trauma. He's just sick and twisted in the head. The Menendez brothers actually have trauma, or at least that's what I think of right now. But let's take a look at the top 10 new things going on in the entertainment industry. Bum, bum, bum. Gosh, what do we have here? We have all sorts of different news. I haven't seen all sorts of things. First trailer for Elevation, a post-apocalyptic thriller starring Anthony Mackie and Marina Baccarin, in theaters on November 8th. And I'm seeing some aliens in this little trailer preview that I'm looking at. I'm actually going to bookmark that. I'm going to look at that later. That looks very interesting, and I like Anthony Mackie. He'd also be one of the few reasons I actually see the new Captain America movie next year. I you know, he's just one of my favorite actors. And other than that, I don't know if I really want to see that movie too much. But new movie, Elevation, coming out. We'll have to actually watch the full trailer. Joseph Quinn says he's been setting himself on fire quite a lot for Fantastic Four. I just get a big tube of gasoline and douse myself in that. I can't tell if Joseph Quinn is being sarcastic or not, but he, of course, is playing the Human Torch in the upcoming Fantastic Four film, which I am kind of intrigued to see. The cast is very good, and I think the script is looking pretty good from what people are saying. Very intrigued to see that one. Number three, first looks at Ana de Armas and Keanu Reeves in the John Wick spinoff Ballerina in theaters on June 6, 2025. Ana de Armas looking excellent as ever in this, looking like an absolute killer. And Keanu Reeves, who doesn't love a little Keanu Reeves? One of the better human beings out there in the world, at least I think. At least the image is portrayed. But I don't know if I'm going to see it. I've not really watched too many of the John Wick movies. I think I've actually only seen the first John Wick movie, so I can't give too much of a, you know, review of it at all. But maybe that's something I go through and binge watch. We can kind of do a little ranking of all the John Wick movies. We'll have to see. Number four, Batman is actually getting a star on the Hollywood Walk of Fame as of today. Interesting. I guess we're just giving Hollywood Walks of Fames to made up people. Huh, Batman is not a real person. Or I guess if you're a rich billionaire and you want to just put on a suit and save the day, you could be Batman. Nothing's going to stop you. Number five, I'm so sorry to my Japanese listeners. Hideo Kojima says he got offers from other studios about a live-action Death Stranding movie before choosing A24. Other studios suggested exploding in a flashy way with a large budget, but I don't like that. I would like to make a slightly different movie with A24. So Death Stranding is actually a video game, and Norman Reedus, he of course plays... Oh, Daryl? Is Daryl his name on The Walking Dead? You know, the cool guy with the crossbow. So in a video game, he did like the motion capture for that and all the, lines? You know, he was the main character in the video game, popular video game. I don't really know the gist of it too much. But he's actually going to be playing that in a live action movie. And A24, I trust them. They put out very unique films. And from the minimal gameplay and images I've seen of Death Stranding, I feel like A24 is the right studio to go with for that. Number six, Samuel L. Jackson says he once wondered if he would stay alive long enough to fulfill his 9-film deal with Marvel Studios. He quotes, "I didn't know they were going to make 9 movies in 2.5 years. That's kind of crazy." Samuel L. Jackson, it is absolutely crazy. Let me tell you that. The fact you're still around, still kicking it, and can still make cameos in films, absolutely love you for that. One of the better actors out there. I always love a little Samuel L. Jackson in a movie. Number seven, major game set to release in 2025, GTA 6, which looks absolutely incredible. Marvel 1943, that game's weird. It's like you play as Black Panther and Captain America, and you're like fighting Nazis. I have no idea. Borderlands 4, Ghost of Yotai, Ghost of Tsushima, that's the sequel to that game, one of a very popular PS5 Samurai games. That looks very good. They're making a Death Stranding 2, the game we just mentioned. Monster Hunter Wild, a sequel to that. And my favorite, Mafia the Old Country. They're making another Mafia game, and I'm going to be 22, almost 23 years old, and I'm going to be playing video games just because all these look so good. And I'll tell you one thing I do need to do. I do need to start monetizing. Like, if I'm doing those games like that, I should be streaming. I should be making YouTube videos. So I really got to work on that. I can't just say, like, oh, I got to work on that. I really got to put action steps towards it. But, man, the 2025 gaming is looking to be amazing. Number seven, Paddington 4 is in the works, targeting a 2027 to 2028 release. I saw the first Paddington. Good movie. I can't believe we're already on Paddington 4. He's an absolute hit, I'm pretty sure, in the British community. That is, I have no idea what to even make of that. Tim Roth has been cast in the Peaky Blinders movie, also starring Cillian Murphy, Barry Keoghan, and Rebecca Ferguson. Ooh, Tim Roth. always a good actor. I liked him in that one show where he's able to detect lies. I can't remember what it's called. It used to be on regular TV, and it was cut short after, I think, 3 seasons, which made no sense because it was so good, and it ended on cliffhanger. Tim Roth, another one of them actors. When he's in something, I'm intrigued. Number 9, a Diddy documentary is in the works at Netflix. It will focus on Diddy's charges of sex trafficking and racketeering, plus his sexual assault and violent abuse allegations. The executive producer is 50 Cent. You're damn straight. 50 Cent been telling us that Diddy was a creep, that Diddy was a monster. And here we are. We're all like, oh, you know, maybe not. I always knew Diddy was a bit off. And we're about to expose all these celebrities, okay? They're all doing evil stuff. They're all doing wacky stuff. And they do some good here and there, but don't be misguided. They're all weird behind the door. And the final thing, number 10. I don't really want to talk about that. What's something fun to end on? Gosh, discussing film has so many things. Oh, yesterday was Mark Hamill's 73rd birthday. Mark Hamill, of course, played the role of Luke Skywalker. And I honestly consider his story to end after the 6th movie. You know, I do not consider the new movies even canon. I absolutely hate them. That's just my personal opinion. But happy late birthday to Mark Hamill. There you go. Those are your top 10 new things in pop culture. And the one thing that I'll say about our episodes we record during the football season is it's very run-of-the-mill where I drop my predictions for the NFL and then I predict UFC. Or I recap the NFL, then I recap UFC. And I don't really have an issue with that. I don't know if other people like that format, but, you know, I got a lot going on, and it's tough to really put together segments. And, you know, I was going to record Monday, stuff came up, was going to record Tuesday, stuff came up, and then all of a sudden it's Thursday, and I'm like, I got to get an episode out, and we got UFC, we got NFL coming at you. So I'm going to work on the format more, get my schedule down, and next week is my birthday week, and I know you're not supposed to, as a man, really care about your birthday, but, you know, I'm just going to have myself a good little week. So we're going to get all of our work done. We're going to try and bring 2 episodes next week, but as for now, we're dropping our NFL Week 4 predictions. I'm excited for it, because guess what? We did recap Week 3 is what I'm trying to say, which is kind of an issue, but, you know, the main thing you need to take away from Week 3 is that my Minnesota Vikings are 3-0. My Minnesota Vikings are 3-0. That's your major takeaway from Week 3 of the NFL. And another thing I want to point out is there is only 5 teams who are still undefeated. Seahawks, Vikings, Chiefs, Bills, and Steelers. Shout out Steelers. My boy Seth, actually happy for them team. And there are actually 1, 2, 3 teams that don't have wins. Every NFC team has a win, oddly enough. The Bengals, the Jaguars, and the Titans all don't have wins. I could have seen the Titans maybe, but Jaguars and Bengals, especially the Bengals, very surprising to me. So, yet again, another week, 16 games. We have 16 matchups to predict. We'll talk about some top fantasy performers that we want to see in some of these games. Let's get right on into it, guys. So kicking us all off, a little Thursday Night Football actually going down tonight. So if you can listen to this within the next 2 hours before it's uploaded, right before Thursday Night Football, you will have my prediction as the Cowboys take on the Giants. And look, it's the Cowboys. I understand they struggle. Okay, I understand their defense is not looking good. The Cowboys come out, start off the season dominant. Just looking dominant. Their defense gets 19 fantasy points. They beat the Browns 33-17 domination. Then blown out by the Saints at home, then lose to the Ravens at home. But mind you, they did come back in that Ravens game. We'll give them the benefit of the doubt, but still not looking the hottest. Now, as they take on the Giants coming off a win. They were able to string a win together. Mind you, that win was over the Browns. Apparently, the Browns suck. You know, we kind of should have predicted that. But here's a little fun fact for you. The Giants have not won against the Cowboys since 2021. They have been swept in the series the last 2, actually, it might have been 3 years or something. So it's been a while. I don't think that changes here. I think this Cowboys team is better than this Giants team. We're going to pick the Dallas Cowboys. And I'm going to need CeeDee Lamb. You know, I don't know if I want him to pop off. Okay, because I'm playing him in a league where I'm 1-2, and another league I'm 3-0 when I have him. So it gets very complicated, but, you know, CeeDee, have a decent day. Dak Prescott, Brandon Aubrey, the Cowboys D, you guys do your thing as well. It's tough when you're in 5 fantasy leagues like me. You have to manage all your teams. And last week we went 1-4, which was not pretty whatsoever. So we're going to look to rebound this week. So we're going to be rooting for a little CD Lamb. But shout out to Malik Nabers, man. Malik Nabers doing his thing. Currently might be the runner for Rookie of the Year. Him and Jayden Daniels, 3 weeks in, both performing exceptionally. We're going with the Cowboys. I just think their team is better. I just think there's always upsets. There's always stuff can happen. And maybe this Cowboys team will completely collapse. But as we've seen, losses to the Saints, losses to the Ravens, both great teams. They beat the Browns. They should handle the Giants. That's how we view this. Next matchup, coming at you at noon. Bengals visiting the Panthers. And this one is a very tricky one. This one is very tricky, and it doesn't have to be tricky, but it just is. Panthers 1-2, you know, they've already given up 95 points this season. They won. They won last week in shocking fashion, beating the Raiders at home 36-22, and at home, I mean in Las Vegas. On the road, they won. Andy Dalton was an absolute star in that one. Deontay Johnson, Chuba Hubbard, Adam Thielen sadly got hurt, but he was performing well, and it was shocking. It was shocking to see them do good. And here's another thing. The Bengals 0-3 to start the year. Now, the Patriots' loss was bad. Okay, Chiefs lost, it was close, okay? But that Commanders lost, that was just an embarrassment, okay? They got embarrassed. Now, Jayden Daniels, 254 yards, 2 touchdowns, only had 2 incompletions on 23 throws. That's not going to get done. Mind you, Joe Burrow, 324 yards, 3 touchdowns. He was looking phenomenal. Jamar Chase had a 2-touchdown day. But team stats, you know, this Bengals defense just gave up way too many points at the end of the day. They were giving up big plays and the offense just couldn't match it. Obviously, the passing game for the Bengals is much stronger than the run game. And my issue with this is because, you know, the Panthers are at home now. They're coming in off momentum. Mind you, Andy Dalton used to play for the Bengals, but it's just so hard to pick against this Bengals team. So I don't really know here. I would love to pick the Panthers to get another upset, but truly, truly, there's just... I understand the Vikings started out, what were we, 0-3, 0-4, but what was our 0-4 loss? Was it to the Chiefs or something, or to the Chargers in a barn burner? I just don't see this here. The Bengals, I'm predicting to win on the road. It would not make any sense to me if the Bengals lost. Mind you, these are all professional athletes, but if the Bengals lose to the Panthers, I actually don't know if I can pick them the rest of the season. But I mean, honestly, if the Panthers win, that would be pretty exciting. Fantasy-wise, I don't think I have any players playing on either of these teams. Now, I could, but I just don't. So, there's that. We're going with the Bengals over the Panthers simply because, I mean, Joe, their team's just better. All right, but we'll have to see. Another matchup for you. Saints versus the Falcons. And what makes this matchup so interesting, of course, this little NFC South. Saints 2-1. They did suffer an unfortunate defeat in their last game to the Eagles. But before that, blowout wins over the Cowboys and the Panthers. I mean, they looked phenomenal in both of those. Alvin Kamara's looking great. Rashid Shaheed, when he gets the ball, can look great. And Derek Carr's kind of found his place with this team. As for the Falcons, you know, they just 0-2 at home, 1-0 on the road. It's tough to know what you're going to get with this Falcons team. Sometimes Kirk pops off, sometimes he doesn't. They have all the tools, but they just cannot seem to execute. And one fun thing about this series is it's actually tied 55-55 all time. So whoever wins this matchup will have the series lead. And as from what I've seen so far this year, 103 points for, 44 points against this Saints team. Currently has the best offense statistically in the NFL. We're going to ride with the Saints to beat the Falcons at home. And I've just noticed I've picked the first three games of the season of this week, all the road teams to win. So I don't know if that's actually going to come true. We'll have to see. But from what I've seen from the Saints team, they've looked so good, dominating the Cowboys. Their loss to the Eagles was on a field goal difference, okay? Don't give them too much slack. Falcons, it's just, I don't know what to do with you. I don't know what to do with you. Player-wise, I have Rashid Shaheed. I don't actually know if I'm going to start Rashid because he kind of put up 0 points last week, which we cannot have. So we'll have to see what happens in terms of all that. So we'll go with the Saints to beat the Falcons. That's what we got. Another one for you. Another divisional matchup. This time we go to the AFC. Back in the Southern divisions, if you will. But the 0-3 Jaguars will be visiting the 2-1 Texans. Texans currently lead the AFC South despite having a minus 19 point differential. That is not going to get done. Okay, that is not going to get done during the season. But, I mean, when it comes to just starting off, 2-1 is pretty good. They've looked good here and there. They did lose last week. They did lose to my Minnesota Vikings in ugly fashion, but also the Vikings are absolutely cracked this year, as we're going to see when we look at their stats later. Jaguars have looked abysmal, and it's all been Trevor Lawrence. And when Trevor Lawrence isn't hot, you know, his wide receivers can't get hot. And ETN and who's the other guy? ETN and, oh my gosh, who is their other running back? Who's the Jaguars' other running back? I'm trying to think of his name. I really like him. Tank Bigsby. You know, if Tank and ETN can't get hot when they're taking all these carries and the offensive line can't block. Houston leads the series all time, 29-15. I just don't see the Jaguars getting a win here. All right, if they're going to win, it's a divisional matchup. But Texans at home, I think this Texans team is going to be coming in with a little bit of fire, a little bit of momentum after getting blown out by my Minnesota Vikings. And Jaguars, I didn't pick you to beat the Bills, but you really let me down. You really let me down. I don't know. ETN could have gotten way more points. And also Brian Thomas Jr., the rookie. He's your top wide receiver, and he can be getting so many more yards. But no, Trevor Lawrence decides to only throw for 186 yards in a primetime game. There we go. There's my little rant. Another one, Broncos visiting the Jets. Here is a really good one. Okay, Broncos, it's been an okay start. 1-2 for a team where it didn't have much real aspirations, and they have a positive point differential. Beat the Bucs, which was an upset last week. Their losses, you know, by a touchdown each to the Steelers and the Seahawks, 2-3-0 teams. I think this Broncos team is being very heavily slept on. I also feel like they are going to finish as a 9-8, 8-9 type team. Jets, they have all the momentum, 2-1, two-game win streak. And talk about last week, 24-3 over the Pats. The Patriots just couldn't get anything going with Aaron Rodgers. And I think that Aaron Rodgers is going to feast on a rookie QB, just strike fear in across the sidelines. And I'm going to give this one to the Jets. Player-wise, I don't really have anyone. Garrett Wilson, Breece Hall, love both those guys. And Aaron Rodgers doing his thing, trying to do the best that he can to lead this Jets team to a Super Bowl. Broncos, Bo Nix, just try. Just try your hardest. Do well. You got Cortland Sutton to pass to when you need to. And there's a lot of other real heaters on that team. I was trying to see in that Buccaneers game, actually, who was the top performers for the Broncos? Because I know some people, they may be like, hey, is it worth picking up fantasy players? Nothing to load now. I love when nothing loads, but, you know, something's wrong with my connection. How about that? Something's wrong with my connection. I think it's a sign we were just never meant to see the Broncos team players. We were never meant to see who the Broncos were going to, who starred on the Broncos. Oh, and now it's working, but we're past that. We're going with the Jets. That's our prediction. Finally, here we are. This should be the main event of the week, if you ask me. You got the Minnesota Vikings. You got the Green Bay Packers. And this time, we're in Lambeau to start out the year. Usually, we visit Lambeau at the end of the year, and we always lose. That's what I always feel happens. But no, my Vikings head to Lambeau, and here's some fun stats for you. The Packers actually lead all-time 66 wins, 58 losses, and 3 ties. So we are behind 8 games to the Packers all-time, but here's something very interesting. The last 2 years, we've actually split the series. Last year, I think it was I can't remember if we won both our games over the Packers. It might have been the year before. Actually, when did I go? I think last year we won both our meetings. The year before, we lost both of our matchups. I honestly can't remember. Oh, no, we've split. That's what I was trying to say. So the past 2 seasons, Vikings and Packers usually split. Usually winning at home wherever they play. The 2 years before that were sweeps, is what I was saying. So over the last 4 seasons, we had Packers win both games, Vikings win both games. Last 2 seasons, they've split. That's what I was going for. Sometimes my notes confuse me. But obviously, we're picking the Vikings. But I just want to touch on how good this Vikings defense is and how unexpectedly good our offense has been. You got to be kidding me. We're statistically the best team in the league. A plus 55-point differential. 3-0. It just doesn't get much better than that. It just really doesn't. Justin Jefferson, when he's healthy, doing what he can. Naylor stepping up. Addison hasn't even been healthy. Aaron Jones, Ty Chandler picking up the load. This team is just so fun. The defense is incredible. The defense is absolutely incredible. And so far, I mean, 3-0 start out the year, picking up wins over the Giants, the 49ers, the Texans, some of our rivals. The Texans, a team that people were thinking was going to the Super Bowl. And now we take on the Packers. Okay, our rival, our official rival, Packers, currently third in the NFC North. They are 2-1 on a little two-game win streak, and they have a little plus 17-point differential. But I will say, you know, that Titans game, Malik Willis looked good, but could have looked better. Eagles loss, they kind of choked at the end, and that Colts game was played so close. And as I'm learning, the Colts might not be as good as people think they're going to be. I obviously think the Vikings are going to dominate, and I think whether it's Malik Willis, whether it's Jordan Love, we are going to feast on them, eat them for breakfast, spit them out, and just dominate. That's all we do. All we do is dominate as a Minnesota Viking. That's just all we do. So that's our prediction. We're going with the Minnesota Vikings. Is anyone surprised I picked them? I would hope not. And then my good buddy Seth, his team plays next as the Steelers take on the Colts. And the Steelers have actually won 8 of the last 10 meetings between them and the Colts. Cool. Fancy enough if you are curious about that. But Steelers, one of the only undefeated teams so far in the NFL. Yet another team with a great offense. They've only scored 51 points, but they've only given up 26 points. So they are the best defense in the league. 3-0 so far. They've been playing really good. Justin Fields has been pretty adequate. The run game hasn't been doing anything too special. They beat the Chargers last time out 20-10. Before that, the Broncos 13-6. Before that, the Falcons 18-10. And now they take on the Colts. You know, I've not really seen the Steelers tested a whole lot throughout their whole season, Aussie. You know, you got the Ravens there. That's a dangerous team. I guess they play the Eagles down the line. Chiefs on Christmas Day. But I mean, honestly, Steelers have a very accessible schedule, and I would project them to do pretty good this year. The Colts, it's rough. Okay, the Colts have started off pretty rough. They're 1-2. They did pick up a win. They beat the Bears. But I mean, -3 point differential. Anthony Richardson, I would not say is living up to the highest of expectations that people had for him, especially drafting him as their QB1 in leagues. We're going with the Steelers. I don't think the momentum stops here. I think they continue to dominate. And the Colts, they just have kind of looked abysmal so far throughout the year. We'll have to see, though. After that, my family's favorite team, the Bears, will be hosting the Rams. And the Rams have won the last 3 meetings, all by at least 10 points. And the Rams had a shocking victory over the 49ers, a little comeback win, if you will, in week number 3. And as the division stands, 49ers are bottom of the barrel in the FC West. The Rams are in third. They have given up 91 points. Okay, so if you're a Bears fan, all right, if you're a Caleb Williams fan, this is Caleb Williams' chance to air out the ball. The Rams have been giving up so many yards to opposing wide receivers. I mean, Juwan Jennings dropped 46.5 fantasy points. Unreal. They beat the 49ers to pick up their first win of the year. Before that, lost to the Lions in week 1 in overtime. They did get blown up by the Cardinals, but this Cardinals team is proving to be much better than we thought they were going to be. So I'm now with the Bears. Yeah, you know, the Bears, that's another tricky one. Okay, I'm a fan. Fantasy-wise, you're going to be finding, actually, Puka Nacua is hurt. So, Kyren Williams, he's going to be probably one of the studs on that Rams team. You know, Tutu Atwell, Tyler Johnson. It's kind of tricky, but the Bears, you know, you got Keenan Allen, DeAndre Swift, DJ Moore, Romo Dunze, you got all these big names. And at the end of the day, Cole Kmet, that's right, one of my tight ends. He's been the dominant player. He's been getting it done. We'll see if the Rams can stop the Bears, but honestly, I do think they get the win here. I think the Rams get the win here. I hate to send the Bears to this spot because I actually like the Bears, and I'm picking a lot of away teams to win, but there's just something about this Rams team. Something about this Rams team where if their offense can just outplay the lack of cornerback and D-back presence they have, they'll get wins, and they'll continue to do well. And by the way, Bears have not won in the last, I think, 4 to 5 years. That could be another sign. So we have that. A little rivalry, which I always notice every single season, appears to be between the Eagles and the Buccaneers. I swear they play every single season. And Tampa Bay has actually won 5 of the last 6 meetings with the Eagles. And that doesn't matter if they're at home or away. They just always seem to be getting the victory. And Buccaneers, I thought they were going to start out 3-0. They really had the potential. But they're now sitting at 2-1 after shockingly losing by three scores, I think it was, to the Broncos. Unreal. Eagles, they're 2-1, second place in the NFC East at the moment. It's interesting about both of these teams. So the Eagles, I got Saquon Barkley, I got Jalen Hurts, I got Devontae Smith, I got Jake Elliott, I got all these players on this team, and it's just like they don't have the same killer drive they used to. Saquon Barkley, best running back in the league right now. He's thriving. Jalen Hurts hasn't really started off too hot. Very mediocre, and if Jalen Hurts isn't doing too hot, Devontae can't get hot. And Devontae should be red hot, being with the fact that A.J. Brown is out. So, and Devontae might even be hurt. So I'll be very curious to see who's actually healthy and showing up for this Eagles team. But I know Saquon will probably run all over the Bucs. And for the Buccaneers, you know, you got Chris Godwin, Mike Evans, Baker Mayfield. They've been doing their thing. Rashad White and Bucky Irving just can't get it going. And I have Rashad White. He, by the way, number four fantasy running back last season, has done nothing to start off the year. He doesn't have a touchdown. He doesn't have much big yardage. And I don't know what's going on. He's about to lose his starting position to Bucky Irving. And another thing is, when we talk about the Raiders, I had Zamir White. He's losing the RB1 spot to Alexander Mattison. It's utterly ridiculous. The Buccaneers seem to win all the time, but I think this is where the Eagles snap the curse. We are picking the Philadelphia Eagles to beat the Buccaneers. You know, I look at this and I see Tampa Bay has won 5 of the last 6. There's that one game they didn't win. I think this is where the Eagles get a little win here. But the Buccaneers, don't be too surprised. I mean, how are they at home so far this year? Buccaneers are 1-1 at home, so it doesn't really matter if they're at home. We'll have to see, though. With that, we move away from our noon games. We get into our 3 o'clock, 3:30, 3:25 games. We start off with the Patriots taking on the 49ers. Pats and 49ers. As we mentioned, 49ers, bottom of the AFC West. Mind you, the three teams in the AFC West are all 1-2. Only the Seahawks are the top team and are going to be the top team no matter what this past week. Patriots, who will be visiting San Francisco, they're 1-2. You know, they haven't had the hottest start. Jacoby Brissett's doing the best he can, if you want to even call it that. But look, it's very simple. The 49ers, win or lose, they lost to the Rams. They lost to the Vikings. I still think this team is way better than the Patriots. 49ers lead the series 9-5 all time. I think a lot of those wins were in the Tom Brady era. I'm sorry, Patriots, but I just don't give you a shot in San Francisco, across the country, and taking on a team where they just have all the weapons in the world. And we just saw that Juwan Jennings is a unreal weapon. Mason Jordan has proven to be an absolutely outstanding. Or Jordan Mason? It's Jordan Mason. That's what it is. Outstanding talent in the wake of Christian McCaffrey, who might be out the whole year. We'll have to see. This 49ers team should beat the Patriots. That would probably be the biggest upset. If the Patriots beat the 49ers, I would consider that the biggest upset of the week, as I would have seen so far. After that, Commanders visit the Cardinals, and this is another interesting one, little NFC battle here. Cardinals are 1-2, but they've been playing pretty good, 82 points for, 64 points against. Commanders, hello, how about the Commanders 2-1 atop the NFC East? Despite having a negative point differential, you know, they get blown out, they get absolutely embarrassed by the Buccaneers, then beat the Giants on game-winning field goal, and beat the Bengals in Cincinnati on Monday Night Football. And now they take a little trip down to Phoenix, down to Arizona, and get to visit all the friends and family. I have no idea if they do, but Jaden Daniels, unreal talent, unreal talent. He has all the weapons to lead this team to a win in any game they have, but Kyler Murray has just been showing out, proving that he belongs. He's looked outstanding. He's truly looked outstanding, if you ask me. As for Marvin Harrison Jr., the best wide receiver rookie so far. I'm not going to say that. Malik Nabers has been balling out too. But I'm just going to say is that this Cardinals team is super good. Here's a fun fact for you. The Commanders actually lead the series 77-47 all time. Redskins, Cardinals, both teams have been around a while. But I've been picking a lot of away teams. We got to go with a home team. We're going to pick the Cardinals to beat the Buccaneers. And it just comes down to talent. It just comes down to talent. I almost wish I had Jaden Daniels. I almost wish I had Marvin Harrison Jr. I mean, even James Conner has been doing good for the Cardinals. These teams are fun. They're feisty, and they like to get it done very much. So, actually, I want to touch on a trade real quick that happened in my 16-man fantasy league where I won't name any names, but someone traded Juwan Jennings, and I think it was Alexander Mattison. No, they traded Stephon Diggs and Alexander Mattison away for Austin Eckler and Juwan Jennings. And I had no words for that. Like, it actually made no sense. And I tried to veto it, and it didn't get vetoed. Terrible trades, and I hate when terrible trades happen. Kind of pisses me off, if you ask me. But that's just a little irritation that I have. Here's one for you. Will the Chargers be the first team of the year to stop America's sweethearts, the Chiefs? I hope so. Goodness me, I do not like the Chiefs. But in a very, very sad turn of events, the Chargers have actually lost the last 5 meetings with the Chiefs. So Patrick Mahomes kind of owns the Chargers. And this is a Chargers team that is lesser of how they've been the last 2 years. Now, they're 2-1 to start off the year. not too bad. They've only given up 33 points. They're a great team. But the Chiefs have the refs. They have everyone with them. And it's just hard to pick against the Chiefs. It truly is. Patrick Mahomes is such a good talent. As much as we hate him, you know, he became Tom Brady faster than Tom Brady became Tom Brady. If you kind of get what I'm saying, like, Tom Brady got to a point where everyone was like, oh, we really hope he loses, really hope he loses. They just want this team to lose. And Travis Kelce, he has had an abysmal start to the season. Pacheco's gotten hurt. Rashee Rice is a stud. Xavier Worthy's a stud. We'll have to see what happens. You know, the Chargers, kind of a weak overall team. J.K. Dobbins, whenever he's on, he's on. Justin Herbert does the best he can. But we're just not picking against the Chargers here. And we're not picking against the Chiefs, I should say. Chiefs over the Chargers. And is this the Chargers team to finally snap the five-game losing streak to the Chiefs? I don't think it is. It could be. You know, anything can happen. It's the NFL. After that, Browns taking on the Raiders. And the Raiders have actually won the last four meetings since 2015. That's all I need to see. I'm picking the Raiders to win this. I'll tell you why I'm picking the Raiders. It's because I've already given up on the Browns. This Browns team is actually terrible. Okay, and there was once a time where Deshaun Watson was one of the best QBs in the league with the Texans. Now he absolutely sucks. Their defense, which was supposed to be one of the top defenses, has already given up 67 points. They've only scored 50. They're coming off a very, very brutal loss to the Giants of all teams. And their only win is over the Jaguars, who absolutely sucks. I'd be surprised if the Browns do anything this whole year. And the Raiders, you know, they lost to the Panthers. Very embarrassing. I think that lights a fire under them. Whenever Devontae has an off game, he always just comes back with this ferocity, just this anger, and gets it done. Madison, Zamir White, they have all the talents to be an amazing backfield. Gardner just needs to string it together. That's all I'm going to say there. So, Raiders over the Browns, that's an easy one for me. After that, Sunday Night Football, and this is they sometimes get the Sunday Night Footballs right. They got this one right. The Bills visiting the Ravens. This is going to be so freaking good. I am pumped for this. Actually, two of the best teams in the league. The Bills, 3-0, the best offense in the league. 112 points scored all year. They've only given up 48. Okay, they actually have a way better point differential than the Vikings. So the Bills are actually the best team in the league so far. No one expected this of them. No one really did. They only lost Diggs. They lost Gabe Davis. But who's stepping up? You got Keon Coleman hasn't really stepped up. You got Dalton Kincaid, Dawson Knox. Who did pop off last week for the Bills? I can't remember. And every time I go to check the freaking stats, the site always closes. But all I know is this. Is it Shakir? I think it's Shakir had a great game for the Bills. But James Cook, he's been balling out. Josh Allen is on a MVP campaign looking to lead this team to glory. And the Ravens, though. The Ravens, they know for being 1-2, they're a good 1-2 team. They're a good 1-2 team. What were their losses to? The Chiefs, and they were upset by the Raiders. They were able to pick up a win over the Cowboys last week. As I look at my predictions so far, I think I have 8 road teams winning. I've only had 5 teams win at home. We are on Sunday Night Football. Does Lamar shine in Sunday Night Football? I cannot recall. I honestly can't recall. I honestly don't really know what to go with here. This is a very tough matchup. The Bills have won the last 2 games. They've played against the Ravens. I love the Bills. I have Josh Allen. But I am going to have to go with the Ravens in this one. I think Lamar Jackson has a great game against this Bills team. And I think it's going to be one of those where the Bills, they're the best 3-1 team, and the Ravens are the best 2-2 team. That's where I think it's going to go. We're going to go with the Ravens in this one. But I would not be surprised in the slightest if the Bills started 4-0. Because the tough part for me is picking home and away. I don't really know if that has a huge implication, but we'll go with the Ravens in this one. After that, 2 Monday Night Football games again. First one, Titans versus the Dolphins. Titans have won the last 2 meetings against the Dolphins in shocking fashion. But I have no faith in this Titans team. Minus 30 point differential. They've given up 78, only scored 48. They're 0-3. Will Levis actually just does not look good. Tony Pollard is the only benefit of this team. They will be in Miami taking on the Dolphins. Dolphins are 1-2. They're on a little 2-game losing streak. Only have scored 33 points, 4, given up 72. But they have all the weapons, all the tools, and their losses, you know, the Bills, the Seahawks. It's I don't know what's going to happen here, but I'm going to go with the Dolphins. All right, we're going to go with the Dolphins. I just do not think the Titans get a win here. Okay, Dolphins, they put up an L last week, but I think if they learn to play with Skylar Thompson, they'll be in good hands. After that, the final game of week number four, already on week number four, Seahawks visiting the Lions. These two teams have put on some great games the last few seasons, and here you have the 3-0, the undefeated Seahawks, one of the only undefeated teams in the league, okay? Taking on the Lions, who are 2-1. They're freaking good, all right? Lions are damn good. But the Lions have actually lost the last six meetings dating back to 2012 against the Seahawks. Seahawks just always seem to have a number up on them. We are in Detroit, which I do think is important. And if I'm not having the Titans beat the Dolphins, I got to go with the Seahawks beating the Lions to make it seven straight times that they have beaten them. So Seahawks over the Lions. For any real reason, no. Jackson Smith and Jigba, I need him to pop off. Can Kenneth Walker get healthy, for goodness sakes? We'll take Amon-Ra St. Brown doing good. We'll take Sam Laporta doing good. Who knows what's going to happen? There's a lot of players in the league, but those are our official. Those are our official week four predictions, if I can use correct grammar, apparently. So there you have it, folks. Let me know who you guys are picking. I always love to hear about it. I'm always intrigued, but it is time we get into these UFC Paris picks, because we have not five matchups, all right? We don't have 10 like the Sphere. We don't even have 11. We don't have 12. We don't have 13. We have 14 different fights starting at 11 in the morning and presumably ending at 6 o'clock at night. It is going to be an action-packed morning. Let me tell you that. I'm so pumped for all these fights. Are they actually trying to get through? Holy cow, actually, how many fights are there? Are they going to try to get through 9 prelims in 2 hours? This might need to start at 9 o'clock, actually, if the UFC is actually being accurate. But we got to drop our predictions. We got to go through all these fights. Let's not waste any time. Let's get right on into it. Alrighty, guys, kicking off this star-studded, this absolutely phenomenal, this French card, we shall head to the men's lightweight division as Bolaji, the Zulu Warrior Oki, takes on Chris the Problem Duncan. I absolutely love the nicknames on these two. Bolaji Oki, 9-1 professionally, Chris Duncan 11-2. Both men are 5'10". Bolaji has a 2-inch reach advantage, 73-71, and both men have the orthodox fighting position with that right hand going forward. Start off with the favorite, Bolaji Oki, who is -190. Chris Duncan +163. These odds are courtesy of BetUSA from Wednesday, from like 3 days before the event, because I'm sure when a lot of people listen to this, it'll be right before or after UFC Paris. So Bolaji Oki, 28 years old, from Belgium, lost his first ever professional bout, and since then is yet to lose on a 9-fight winning streak. Of his 9 wins, 5 KOs and 1 submission. Came on off of Dana White's Contender Series, where he won last season, season 7, with a round 1 TKO. Had a split decision win over Timmy Kwamba. I thought it was Timothy Kwamba for some reason, but it's Timmy Kwamba. That was back in February. In that, he had some good grappling. Actually defended 6 takedowns from Timmy, and outstruck him 60-33. Bolaji Oki, young up-and-comer. Absolutely love him. Fighting from Belgium, too. Absolutely love that. We actually have a lot of downloads of the podcast from Belgium, so shout out to my Belgium listeners. I might just have to pick Bolaji Oki just because of that. His opponent, Chris Duncan. Chris Duncan is, of course, 11-2, 31 years old, from Scotland. Trains at American Top Team, actually. Of those 11 wins, 7 KOs and 1 submission. And he's actually fought in Bellator before, which is a fun fact that I wasn't even aware of. Chris Duncan, 3-1 in the UFC, was on a little 3-fight win streak before unfortunately losing to Manuel Torres. Earlier this year in February, he was submitted in 1:46, which is kind of embarrassing. And we actually just saw Manuel Torres get knocked out cold at UFC Noche. Duncan, you know, kind of leans on the grappling when the striking isn't going too well. He's fought in on Dana White's Contender Series twice. I don't know. There's little to be loved about Chris Duncan here. Bolaji Oki, the winning streak, the fact that he hasn't lost in so long. You already know we're going with Bolaji Oki, and also because of the Belgium reasoning. We could pick something as dumb as that as to why we're picking a fighter. At the end of the day, it's 50-50, two human beings. We're going with Bolaji Oki. I just kind of like him better. I like his striking better, personally. heading to the women's bantamweight division for our next matchup as Nora Cornali takes on Jacqueline Cavalcanti. Nora is 8-1. Jacqueline is 7-1. 5'8" to 5'7" gives Jacqueline 1-inch in height. 3 inches in reach, though, for Jacqueline as she has 70 inches to 67. Both women in the orthodox fighting position. Nora Cornali is actually the underdog in this one, plus 185. Jacqueline is a minus 225 favorite. Nora is 34 years old on an 8-fight winning streak, similar to Balaji, lost her first ever professional bout. Since then, yet to lose. She was actually supposed to fight Jermaine Durandamy, so they thought very highly of Nora Cornali for this matchup. From France, she's the hometown girl. 6 KOs and 1 submission. So how about that? 7 of her 8 wins by finish. We love to see that in the females. And she's 2-0 in the UFC. Last fought in April and got a round 2 knee finish of Melissa Mullins. Hit her with some knees in the clinch and got it done. I absolutely love what I see from Nora Cornali. And I think so high of her, especially knowing they wanted her to take on the former women's title challenger, Jermaine Durandamy. It's a shame that Jermaine couldn't be here, but instead, taking her place, the favorite, Jacqueline Cavalcanti. 27 years old, on a 5-fight winning streak. She's from Portugal. Of her 7 wins, she's gotten 3 of those by KO. 2-0 in the UFC. She fought on the last Paris card. Got a win over Zara Farron on that. And she fought in August and won a split decision over Josiane Nunez. But I'm sorry, I gotta ride with Nora. She's an underdog. She's on the win streak. She's from France. I always love to pick the hometown fighters, usually. And one thing I'll say is that when you're supposed to fight someone like Jermaine Durandamy and they give you Jacqueline Cavalcanti on short notice, there's a reason for that, and it's a big opportunity for both these women to get a victory here and to move up into the rankings. This should be competitive, but my money lies with Nora Cornali. Plus, if you like underdog predictions, there you go. Following that, we drop to the men's flyweight division as Daniel Berez takes on Victor El Magnifico Altamirano. Daniel, 16-6, Victor, 12-4. 5'8" to 5'6" gives Victor 2 inches in height. He also has 4 inches in reach, 70-66. Switch stance for Victor, orthodox for Daniel Berez. Daniel Berez, plus 105, is the underdog, minus 125. Victor is the favorite. Daniel Berez, 35 years old from Spain. Of his 16 victories, 13 by finish, 7 KOs and 6 submissions. Of his 6 losses, though, 3 of them by submission. And most recently made his UFC debut last July of 2023. He got submitted with an arm triangle in 3 minutes and 26 seconds. But his striking looked good in that. He actually fought on Dana White's Contender Series back in 2021. Look, Daniel, been a while since you've been in Octagon, and it's certainly not easy going when you take on Victor Altamirano. Victor, the favorite, 33 years old, born in Mexico, now lives and trains in Texas. Of his 12 wins, he's gotten 2 by knockout and 4 by submission. He's only been finished once by submission, and that wasn't even in the UFC. That was in his pre-UFC days. He is 2-3 in the UFC, okay, but 2 of those are split decisions. Another one's a unanimous decision loss to Tim Elliott. Last fight was in February, lost a split decision to Felipe Dos Santos. In that fight, he landed 9 takedowns. Very fascinating. Victor, I am going to be picking to win this one and by submission. I suppose I should clarify how I think they're going to win. I'm going Balaji. Actually, where is, let me actually find my phone real quick because I always drop my predictions officially on, what's it called? Verdict MMA. Great app for any MMA fans that want to use this. And I always forget to put how I think they're going to win it. So Victor Altamirano, we're going to say by submission. And we'll say a round 1 submission, similar to how Daniel lost the last fight where he dropped Rafael Filho, followed him to the ground, and they got submitted. But look, Daniel, 35 years old, hasn't fought in over a year. Victor, he's been getting scrappy. His losses are all decisions. I got to go with Victor Altamirano for this one. After that, women's bantamweight division. Are they any of these women ranked? Are any of these women? Ali Perez, she is ranked. The number 15th ranked Alien Fiona Perez takes on Daria Iron Lady Zelzinakova. Wow, what a last name on you. Alien Perez, minus 235. Daria, plus 195. Oh, Eileen is the favorite. Alien Perez, 10-2 record. Daria, 9-1. Good record on these ladies. 5'9" to 5'5" does give Daria 4 inches in height. She also has 2 inches in reach. 68 inches to 66. Switch stance for Aline, orthodox for Daria Zelenikova. I like this. I like this matchup, ladies. Both of these are very talented on ranked women's bantamweights. Let's start off with the favorite, Aileen Perez, 29 years old from Argentina, but now lives and trains in Florida. Of her 10 wins, 4 KOs and 1 submission. And of her 2 losses she's experienced, she was submitted once. That was actually in her debut at the 2022 Paris card. Now, here we find ourselves, 3-fight win streak for Aileen Perez. Been doing it through the grappling. Okay, over her last 3 fights, 18 takedowns. All right, big win over Jocelyn Edwards in June. Dominated her, knocked her down, took her down, did what she needed to. But she's very famous for, after all of her wins, she likes to twerk in the octagon when she wins. Very weird, very peculiar. But hey, I'm not going to judge. Who am I to judge? I'm just Zachary. That's all I am at the end of the day. Her opponent, the underdog, Daria Zelenikova, 28 years old from St. Petersburg, Russia, but now lives and trains in Paris, France. Over 9 wins, 5 KOs. Her only loss, she was knocked out, but that was a while ago. She now finds herself on the edge of a win streak as Daria Zelenikova returns. She fought in March of this year, made her UFC debut, got a decision win in that. But I don't know, guys. I don't know. I know Daria has the height. She has the reach. But I just think she's going to get taken down over and over. And we get an Aileen Perez unanimous decision. Now, unfortunately, you know, I always love my Russian women picking them. But we are going to be going with Aileen Perez for this one. I just think her grappling's superior. She's in the rankings right now. And she easily could have fought up, in my opinion. So probably not the most exciting fight. But nonetheless, it will be a fight. After that, we go from the women's bantamweight to the men's bantamweight as Taylor Double Impact Lapalouse, love your last name, Taylor, by the way, Vince Vendetta Morales is his opponent. Taylor Lapalouse, 20-4, Vince Morales, 16-7, 5'9 to 5'6, gives Vince 3 inches in height. Taylor has 3 inches in reach, 73 to 70. Ooh, southpaw stands for Taylor Orthodox for Vince Morales. This will be an interesting one, guys. Taylor is a -380 favorite. Vince, +290 underdog. Taylor Lapalouse, 32 years old, hometown, Paris, France, that's right. Half of his wins are by decision, the other half, 4 KOs and 6 submissions. Of his 4 losses, though, never been finished. This is currently his second stint in the UFC. He had a little stint from 2015 to 2016 where he went 3-1. Never really amounted to much. But since returning in September of 2023 at the last Paris card, beat Kaelin Theron, lost to Fareed Bashrat, most recently fought in June, and beat Cody Stammen by unanimous decision. I will say, 32 years old at bantamweight, there's a lot of young, hungry up-and-comers in that division. Taylor, I don't really know what to do with you here, but this is a favorable matchup for him as he takes on Vince Morales. He's the underdog, 33 years old from Oregon. Of his 16 wins, 12 finishes, 7 KOs and 5 subs. Of his 7 losses, he's been finished 3 times, very interestingly enough. Vince left the UFC, you know, Vince was cut from the UFC in 2022, but since then leaving, went on a 5-fight winning streak, so he's coming in with some momentum. Some of the guys that he lost to in the UFC, Miles Johns, Jonathan Martinez, Chris Gutierrez, Song Yadong, so he was fighting some killers. But Taylor, he's in his hometown. He's in his home nation. We're riding with Taylor Lapalouse in this one. But Vince, you know, I hope you win. You'll be on a 6-fight win streak then. Best of luck to you. That's all I'm going to say for that. After that, we get into the biggest favorite, biggest underdog on the whole card as the -1,000 favorite, Ludwig Mr. Highlight Klein, takes on the +625 underdog, Roosevelt the Predator Roberts. The Predator Roberts. I just do not think the Predator is a good nickname. That's just my opinion. Ludwig Klein, 22-4 with 1 draw. Roosevelt Roberts, 12-5 with 1 no contest. 6'2" to 5'7". A crazy 7-inch height advantage for Roosevelt Roberts. Absolutely crazy. But the reach, 73-72, so not too big of a difference. Southpaw for Ludwig, orthodox for Roosevelt Roberts. Let's start with Ludwig, man. He was supposed to take on Nicholas Moto, which really isn't saying much compared to Roosevelt Roberts. But I thought Ludwig Klein was ready for a ranked opponent, I guess. Not. The 29-year-old is from Slovakia. He has 17 finishes of his 22 wins, 9 by KO, 8 by sub. Of his 4 losses, he's been finished 3 times, which is just absolutely bonkers to think. He's only been the distance a select number of times. As of right now, currently on a, 5-fight unbeaten, 6-fight unbeaten streak, I should say, 5-fight win streak, depending how you look at it, but picked up a win over Thiago Moises in June, dominated him, knocked him down twice, before that, knocked out AJ Cunningham in March, trying to cap off a little 3-0 year, I think he does. And, oh, I guess I do have to cover Roosevelt Roberts. But Ludwig Klein, so dominant, his only losses back in 2021, Mike Trezano, Nate Landers, since then. perfect, perfect for Ludwig Klein. Roosevelt, his opponent, of course, stepping down on short notice, 30-year-old from California, 4 KOs, 5 submissions. He's gotten some finishes here and there, you know. Of his 5 losses, though, he has been finished 3 times, which is kind of unfortunate. And he's currently on a 3-fight losing streak, so that's not the best. But Roosevelt, you know, your last loss was to Matus Rebeke. Before that, Naxio Bahomides. Before that, Jim Miller. So he's been fighting some killers. But yeah, Ludwig Klein, I got a round 1 submission for Ludwig in this one. I think when you look at it, 9 KOs, 8 subs of his losses, Roosevelt Roberts has been finished by armbar, actually 3 times in his career. So there we have it. Going with Ludwig Klein, I mean, I'm just not picking against the minus 1,000 favorite. That's just not what I'm going to be doing here. I'm sorry, Roosevelt, but Ludwig Klein deserves a ranked opponent, not a lower level like you. After that, we jump up to the men's light heavyweight division for a fun one here as Omar Sy takes on Dawoon Jung. Ceseda, that's his nickname. Omar Sy, undefeated, 10-0. Dawoon Jung, 15-5-1. 6'4 to 6'4, same height, but 5 inches in reach for Omar Sy. 83 to 78, very notable orthodox stance for both of these men. Omar Sy, minus 550, huge favorite. Dawoon Jung is the plus 390 underdog. Omar, 28 years old, young, from Paris, France. Of his 10 wins, 4 KOs and 4 submissions. Kid's undefeated. Kid looked great in his debut back in May, submitted Tuco Tukos on short notice. He actually had 3 opponents before getting Tuco Tukos. So Omar Sy, it was a struggle to even get an opponent to fight him. Here he is in the UFC, and he gets to have his second fight in Paris, France. So happy for him. He takes on Dawoon Jung. Dawoon, the plus 390 underdog. 30 years old from South Korea. Of his 15 wins, 11 KOs and 2 subs. Very nice. Now, I won't lie. Of his 5 losses, he has been finished 3 times and is currently on a 3-fight losing streak. Last fought in September of 2023. Lost to Carlos Ulberg before that. Lost to Devin Clark. Lost to Dustin Jacoby. Look, I hate to be that guy, but I just don't see Dawoon Jung getting it done here. I do think we push Omar Sy past round 1 with Dawoon Jung into round 2, but we then lead into an Omar Sy round 2 knockout. So Omar Sy in Paris, his home people, his home country, there's no way my boy is losing. He's 28 years old, he's undefeated, he's young, he's hungry, and his skill set, I think, is superior to Dawoon Jung. So Omar Sy, I like what I saw from you when you fought earlier this year in May. I'm riding with you. After that, we get to our final prelim of the night. Final prelim of the night as Ion the Hulk Kudalaba takes on Ivan Ersalan in the men's light heavyweight division. I love when we get light heavyweight action. There's just always something fun about watching the big boys scrap. Oh, watching them go at it. But Ion Kudalaba, 17-10 with 1 draw and 1 no contest. Ivan Ersalan, 14-3 with 1 no contest. Ivan making his UFC debut. They don't even have his stats ready. They don't even have his stats ready on UFCstats.com. But 6'3 to 6'1, I do have it pulled up. Ivan Ersalan, 2 inches in height over Ion Kudalaba. And he has a same reach, 75 inches for both of them. Orthodox stance for Ivan, southpaw for Ion Kudalaba. Now, this one is very fascinating. I'm very intrigued to see what goes on in this one. You know, minus 117, minus 103. The odd makers have this as dead even. But Ion the Hulk Kudalaba, He's had a very interesting run. Always a guy where it's like if he could really string it together, he could find himself getting a ranked opponent, and not even a ranked opponent. He could find himself being one of the best in the world. But Ion just always seems to lose. It's just been a recurring thing here. Of his 10 losses, he has an outstanding 9 in the UFC. Now, let me just read some of the names. Misha Serkinov, Jared Cannonier, Glover Teixeira, Magomed Ankalaev twice, Ryan Spann, Jai Walker, Kenny Chukane. Look, a bunch of killers, okay? But the wins, far and few. He's currently 1-4 in his last 5. His only win over Tanner Boser in April of 2023, coming off a really rough loss to Felipe Lins. Felipe Lins just should not have beaten him in that. Ion kind of choked after round 1. I don't know what more you want me to say. Ion, 30 years old, from Moldova, now Vegas, 13 KOs, 2 subs. Of his 9 losses, finished 7 times. There's just no appeal from Ion for me. Ivan, making his debut from Croatia, of all places, 32 years old. Coming off a win, just 1 win, of his 14 wins, 10 KOs and 1 sub. And of his 3 losses, he's been finished twice. And he actually fought in KSW, which is where, what's his face? Who's Driscus Duplessis? Driscus Duplessis won a championship in KSW. Fun fact enough. So we're going to go with Ivan Ursulon, round one knockout. It's a fun pick. It's right there. And really, I want to see some finishes. That's all I really gasped for on this card. So Ivan getting it done in his debut. Kudalaba's just done nothing with anything. But this could be one of those cases where, hey, he humbles the new guy coming to the UFC. I personally don't see that being the case. We'll have to see. After that, we get into our main card here. Absolutely love this main card. Kicking it off, we got another Frenchman back in action as Fares Zayam, the Smile Killer. Wow, what the frick? Smile Killer. That sounds like a serial killer nickname. Takes on Matt the Steam Rolla Frivola. Now, that's a nickname I love. Fares Zayam, 15-4. Matt, 11-4. 6'1" to 5'9" gives Fares 4 inches in height. He also has 3 and 4 inches in reach. How about that? 4-4, 75-71. Orthodox stance for both of these fighters. Fares is the favorite at -130, but +110 for Matt. Very close odds. Fares, a Smile Killer Zayam, 27 years young from France. Of his 15 wins, 4 KOs and 5 subs. Now, of his 4 losses, he's been submitted 3 times. He is on a 3-fight win streak and is currently 5-2 in the UFC. Last loss was to Terrence McKinney in 2022. Coming off a win over Claudio Puelles by split decision in February, one issue for Fares appears to be the grappling department, but I don't think that should be too much of a problem, as Matt Frivola has kind of been leaning on his hands as of late. And, you know, this is kind of a step up in competition for Fares. Matt Frivola was a guy who used to be in the rankings. That's right, Matt the Steamroller Frivola, 34 years old, born in New York, now lives and trains in Tampa Bay, Florida. So it's kind of weird he's not on that Tampa Bay card. Of his 11 wins, 4 KOs and 3 subs. Of his 4 losses, he's been KO'd 3 times. He was actually supposed to fight Michael Johnson in May, but that fight was canceled. Last time Matt fought, it was a loss to Benoit St. Denis in November of 2023. But before that, knocked out Drew Dober in round 1, knocked out Ottoman Azatir in round 1, knocked out Gennaro Valdez in round 1. He's been on an absolute spree. And the last two men to beat him have been Armin Sarukian, who's fighting for the belt, and Benoit St. Denis, who's in the main event. So I think we should hold, you know, Matt Frivola not to the highest of standards here. He actually took down Benoit St. Denis twice in 2 minutes. So he could do the same to Fares here. I don't really know who to pick. You know, I kind of like Fares Zayam. He's also the hometown boy. But if you're being taken down a number of times by Claudio Puelles, they're taking a guy, Matt Frivola, who has pretty good striking. I think the pick here is pretty obvious. We're going to be going with, I was going to say Matt Frivola, but I just don't know. I like what I've seen from Fares. He just hasn't been the most impressive. But if I'm being honest, we can't have all of our, you know, Paris guys winning. But I do think Fares gets it done here. I got around to the 27-year-old. I think he gets past the stepping stone that is Matt Frivola. That's the case for me. After that, we head to the men's featherweight division as, oh man, this is going to be a good one. Morgan, the Last Pirate Cherie, takes on Gabriel Fly Miranda. Morgan is 19-10-1. Wow, 30-fight veteran at 28 years old. Incredible. Gabriel Miranda, 17-6. 3 inches in height for Gabriel, 5'11" to 5'8". He also has 2 inches in reach, 71-69. Both men are in the orthodox fighting position. Morgan Cherie is a -750 favorite here, +500 for Gabriel Miranda. Morgan was supposed to take on AJ Cunningham. That fight came apart because AJ got hurt, but I think nonetheless, AJ Cunningham and Gabriel Miranda are the same person. Okay, Morgan Cherie, 28 years old, from France. Of his 19 wins, 11 KOs and 3 subs, he has only ever had 1 loss by submission, which was a long time ago. His other 9 are by decisions. Who is he? AJ Cunningham, I said he's supposed to fight him. But I mean, so far, 2 fights in the UFC, performance of the night, last time they were in Paris, and he had a fight of the night against Chepe Marisco in April. Morgan's a killer. I absolutely love him. He's been a champion in other promotions. This should be an easy walk for him. As he takes on Gabriel Miranda, look, Gabriel, the 500 underdog, 34 years old, from Brazil. Of his 17 wins, 1 KO and 16 subs. Crazy, if you ask me. Of his 6 losses, 2 by KO, one of which was by Benoit St. Denis in 2022, and he actually picked up a win in September 2023, submitting Shane Young in 59 seconds. But I don't think that's going to be the case here. Morgan's going to manhandle him. Morgan's going to do what he does best, get him to a decision. And actually, you know what? We're going to say Morgan Cherie with a little round 2 knockout of Gabriel Miranda. Because the last time Gabriel was in Paris, he got knocked out in round number 2. I like Morgan Cherie. He's an entertaining fighter. Gabriel Miranda, 100% finish rate. We do like to see that too. Fourth from last fight, welterweight division, Kevin Joe Sett takes on Brian Battle. And Brian Battle's a name I've been itching to see back in the UFC since his last fight. He had an awkward no contest against Angelusa in a co-main event, nonetheless, of a fight night. And finally, we get to see him back in action. And he takes on Kevin Jossett. Kevin Jossett, plus 142. Is the underdog. Battle, of course, the minus 167 favorite. Brian Battle. I rock with Brian Battle, if I'm being honest. I really do. Kevin, 10-2. Brian Battle, 11-2. 6'1", 6'2". You know, 1 inch in height for Kevin. 77 inches, 75 for Battle. Both men, they're orthodox. Very similar. Great matchmaking here, I want to say. Kevin, all right. Kevin Air Jossett, 31 years old, was born in France, but now trains out of New Zealand. Of his 10 wins, 4 KOs, 1 sub, currently on a little 5-fight win streak. And of his 2 losses, one of them was to Jack Del Maddalena, who finished him. So, as we all know, Jack Del Maddalena, top 5 welterweight in the world. Let's not hold them too much against him. Debuted in 2023 and went 2-0 in a 3-month span from September to December. Very impressive wins over Kiefer Crosby and Song Ki-Nong. Hasn't been able to get a fight since then. Now, so it is kind of a tricky way to go from Song Ki-Nong to Brian Battle. Brian Battle, the Ultimate Fighter winner from 3 years ago, I believe it was. Brian Battle won one of the Ultimate Fighter things, beats Andre Petroski, beat Trayshawn Gore. It's actually a pretty entertaining season. The favorite, 30 years old from North Carolina, of his 11 wins, 3 KOs and 5 submissions. Of his 2 losses, he's only ever been submitted once. And by the way, in the UFC so far, 5-1. That one lost to Renat Fakhradinov. He's also had some crazy finishes of Takashi Soto, AJ Fletcher, Gabe Green. Like I said, an awkward no contest last time out. I don't think he deals with that. Okay, I think this is going to be a great fight. I want to say a knockout for Brian, but I really just feel this is going to be a close fight to the decision. We're going with Brian Battle. I've liked what I've seen from him so far. He has all the tools in the world. That's our dog. We're riding with Brian Battle. He's a fun fighter. He's feisty, likes to get after it. We love to see that. And then we get into the big three, the final three of the night. This one, sleeping on everyone's radar. Keep this one on your radar, I should be saying. As William Jaguar Gomez takes on Joe Henderson Tubaro Brito. This one's going to be good. This one's going to be lights out type of good. William Gomez is the plus 250 underdog. Joe Henderson Brito, minus 300. William, 13-2. Joe Henderson, 17-3. 6'5'8 does give William 4 inches in height, but he has 1 inch reach. So 73-72, pretty similar in reach. Southpaw stands for William, orthodox for Joe Henderson Brito. Okay, let's begin with the Jaguar, William Gomez. 3-0 in the UFC so far. 27 years old from Paris. Currently on an 11-fight winning streak. Wow, incredible. Of his 13 wins, 7 KOs and 1 submission. He's actually had 2 canceled bouts this year, very interestingly enough. So I'm happy we actually get to see him fight. He fought on the last Paris card. He's fought on both of them. He's won both of those fights. Last one was kind of weird, where apparently he was fighting this guy named Giannis Gamori, and Giannis thought he got hit with a low kick, but it was actually a body kick, and there's this weird like doctor stoppage, but that just turned into the fight ending. Very odd, very complicated, but he's a talented fighter. Young, I forget how young William Gomez and Taylor Lapalus kind of just blend together for me as two similar fighters in similar weight classes. And unfortunately for William, you know, he might not be memorable after this fight as he takes on Joe Henderson Brito. Joe Henderson Brito, the minus 300 favorite, 29 years old from Brazil. Okay. And of his 17 wins, he has 15 finishes, 7 KOs, and 8 submissions. Currently on a 5-fight win streak with all of those wins coming by finish. This dude. 2 of his 3 fights he's lost have been, he's been finished in. He was supposed to fight Dan Ige in July. By the way, Dan Ige is currently the number 14th ranked men's featherweight in the world. His only loss was on short notice up in weight at lightweight against Bill Augeo in 2022. He beat Diego Lopez on the Contender Series. This dude's a killer. Round 1 knockout of Andre Fili. 2-minute submission of Lucas Alexander. 3-minute knockout of Weston Wilson. A performance of the night guillotine choke of Jonathan Pierce. And he fought in May of this year, and he beat Jack Shore so badly, the fight had to be stopped. He cut him open. It was, oh my gosh, Jonathan Brito's a killer. I'm easily going with him. I'm easily going with Joe Henderson Brito in this one. I think Joe Henderson Brito has all the tools except maybe the height, maybe the size to be a world champion. I'm going round 2 submission. It just seems to be round 2 seems to be his round where he gets it done in. It's entertaining. I'm excited. I'm truly excited for this matchup. And William Gomez could very much surprise me, but I'm a Joe Henderson Brito fan. It's probably who we're going to ride with. So Joe Henderson Brito, round 2 submission. That's my prediction. with that. We get into I'm so surprised this isn't the main event. I really am. I don't know what went on behind the scenes, but the number 4 ranked Nazem Imavov and the number 8th ranked Brendan Allen, they're your co-main event, men's middleweight division. And the one reason that I'm very surprised this isn't is because this has title shot implications. Okay, the winner of this is probably getting a title shot. Okay, unless Robert Whittaker and Khamzat, the winner of that, sneaks in. So it's perplexing to me how you got Nazem Imavov, who was in a main event. These guys have been main event guys their last 3, 4, 5 fights they've all had. So I don't know the booking decision by the UFC. They always have weird booking decisions. Benoit St. Denis and Hamo Ikano might have had more personality. Might be the bigger draw, which I actually think is probably the case. But nonetheless, here we go. Nazem Imavov, Brendan Allen in the men's co-main event. Nazem. 14-4 with one no contest. Brendan All In Allen 24-5. 6'3" to 6'2" gives Nazardine 1 inch in height. They both have a 75-inch reach. Orthodox stance, these two are eerily similar. Kind of trips me out. Brendan Allen is the underdog at +178. Nazardine the favorite at -215. Let's kick it off. Nazardine Imavov, guys. 28 years old, born in Russia, but now lives and trains in France. So he's the hometown guy. Of his 14 wins, 10 finishes, 6 KOs, 4 subs, he's only ever been submitted once in his 4 losses. Last time he lost, Sean Strickland, January 2023. Since then, no contest against Chris Curtis. Beat Roman Dolidze in a main event this year, and TKO Jared Cannonier on the feet in June in a main event. Nazardine he just has the build of a world champion, okay? And he's only 28 years old. He's just incredible. He's really an incredible talent. And I'm kind of sad that he's not the main event. I just feel like the work he's been putting in, I'm not going to say that Benoit St. Denis and Hamo Ikano haven't been putting in work, but certainly Allen and Imavov have been much more active than these two. But good stuff from Nazardine. I like what I've seen from him, but there's just something about the other man. There's just something about his opponent, guys. That's right. The +178 underdog, Brendan All In Allen. And guys, 28 years old as well. 7-fight win streak from Louisiana. Of his 24 wins, 5 KOs, 14 subs. Of his 5 losses, he's been finished 3 times. 7-fight win streak is absolutely crazy in the UFC. Of those 7 wins, 5 by rear naked chokehold. This dude has a set move. He has a finisher. This dude has a WWE finisher of a rear naked chokehold. Only losses in the UFC are to Sean Strickland and Chris Curtis, which is kind of funny since they're boys. But I mean, he beat Chris Curtis in a rematch in April, submitted Paul Craig in November last year, beat Bruno Silva in June of last year, beat Andre Munoz in February last year. I mean, dude, he has been on the run of a lifetime, and it culminates here with my upset pick of the night, my upset pick of the night, as I think Brendan Allen shocks the masses. I don't know if he's going to get submission. Okay, I don't know if he can submit Nazardine Imavov, but I think Brendan Allen is able to get it done, and he beats Nazardine Imavov in the co-main event and moves to the number 4 middleweight spot in the world. That's my prediction. You know, I just think Nazardine, he's supposed to just walk through Brendan Allen. And people don't like how cocky Brendan Allen is. I personally love his cocky attitude, so we're going with Brendan Allen. I would love to see a rear naked choke, but I'm just going to be, I don't really want to say moderate or conservative, but I just don't really know if he's able to get the finish on Nazardine Imavov. So, Brendan Allen, that's my prediction. I absolutely love it. And with that, guys, we get to our main event of the evening as the number 12 ranked men's lightweight in the world, Benoit, God of War, St. Denis, takes on the number 11th ranked Renato Moicano. Actually, does Renato have a nickname? It should be Money Moicano. I don't know how that's not his official nickname yet, but it's a self-proclaimed nickname, I believe. Renato is the underdog at +235, Benoit the favorite at -285. Renato, 19-5-1, Benoit, 13-2 with one no contest. Both men are 5'11". 73-inch reach advantage to 72 for Benoit. Southpaw against Orthodox. Benoit fights with that left hand going forward. Let's kick it off with Money Moicano. Now Moicano has been fighting in the UFC since 2014. This is year 10 for him. 35-year-old from Brazil, now lives and trains in Florida. Of his 19 wins, 1 KO and 10 submissions. Now, of his 5 losses, he has been KO'd 3 times and submitted once. So, you know, sometimes he gets finished here and there. But last time he lost, Rafael Dos Anjos in 2022. Before that, Rafael Fiziev. Before that, Chancellor Jung. Before that, Jose Aldo. Before that, Brian Ortega. You truly have to be talented to beat Renato Moicano. And Currently on a 3-5 win streak, beat Brad Riddell in 2022. So far 2-0 this year with a win over Drew Dober and a TKO of Jalen Turner. His first TKO of his career was this year at UFC 300 against Jalen Turner. Incredible. And it's earned him a main event, and I'm happy for him. Okay, Hanan Wakanu's got a podcast. He's got a personality. He's so funny, and it's crazy. At 35 years old, he's entering his prime. He's getting a big opportunity. 5-1 in his last 6 fights. He's fun, okay? But there's one issue, all right? He is taking on the god of war, Benoit Saint-Denis, the 28-year-old from France here. He's from 100% finish rate. 4 KOs and 9 submissions. Actually, most recently beat Mark Diakise in a grappling match in May. He had one of the greatest 2-round fights I've seen against Dustin Poirier. Mind you, not even 2 rounds. The greatest 7 minutes and 32 seconds of octagon time. Just nonstop action. 5-2 in the UFC so far, dude. He's incredible. He's incredible. His only 2 losses, short notice to Elizeo Zaleski dos Santos, and with a staph infection fighting Dustin Poirier, which he doesn't even like to bring up the fact he has a staph infection. Like, this dude was in a special ops, all right, team. He was killing people with the French national government. This dude's an absolute murderer, okay? He's knocked out Gabriel Miranda. He has knocked out Thiago Moises. He's knocked out Matt Frivola. He submitted to Ishmael Bonfim. He submitted Nicolas Stolze. He is a murderer. He is a killer. He is the god of war. Benoit Saint-Denis. And I don't know how long this fight's going to go. Okay, I don't know. Benoit's a fast starter. Benoit likes to get it going. But I think Canelo's going to get this on the ground. He's going to get reversed. And a round 2 submission is going to come. Maybe he'll even get a knockout. But we're going with Benoit Saint-Denis all day. He's one of my favorite fighters, guys. If you can't tell by the heightening of the pitch in my voice, I'm a big Benoit guy. I'm a big Benoit guy. Not Chris Benoit, Benoit Saint-Denis, that is. So, Benoit Saint-Denis, that's our prediction. This should be a fantastic main event. I expect some grappling. I expect some striking. And my one hope, you know, I know people are getting their money's worth here, is that the energy of the crowd hasn't died down, being that these foreign crowds, they pop out early. Okay, and 14 fights. That's so many. I've seen more, but that's just how it goes. That's just how it goes sometimes. How fun. How adorable. I love it. Alrighty, guys. That'll do it for today's episode. We've gotten our week 4 predictions in. We've gotten our UFC Paris predictions in. We are all predicted out. So let me know who you guys are predicting. And next week on the pod, I'm debating bringing a guest on. I really, truly am. It could stir some controversy, so I'm being kind of careful. But I have some fun segments I'm thinking about doing. I was not going to bring this up, but I just got to bring it up to tease you all. We're probably going to do an overrated or rated properly for every UFC champion. Believe it or not, conspiracies and who we think is going to be winning the college football championship. What? Lots of fun stuff. I will see you next week, guys. As always, I'll catch you next time. I kind of butchered that. I'm trying to think of some good endings or something. Is that I need something better to end with. And I will see you all in the future. Now, guys, we're keeping it old school already. I will catch you all next time on the Surprise Jab Podcast.